OpenServe is more than just SA's largest telecoms infrastructure provider. It's the answer to new ways of doing business, a connection to cutting-edge technology and infinite possibilities, a connection to tomorrow. Connect with us at openserve.co.za.
This episode of the Tech Central podcast is brought to you by Pinnacle, Africa's top ICT distribution business, delivering the exceptional every time. I'm Duncan MacLeod, and you're listening to the Tech Central podcast. I'm on an internet call to Cape Town now to talk to eMedia Holdings CEO Andre van der Veen. eMedia is the parent company of broadcasting assets such as free-to-air channel ETV, 24-hour news channel ENCA, and satellite platform OpenView. Andre, welcome to the podcast. We're going to be talking about digital terrestrial television migration today. But before we get into that, you announced recently that you'll be stepping down as CEO of eMedia at the end of November after about a year or so in the role. Why are you leaving and where are you going?
Thanks, Duncan. Yes, I am leaving at the end of November. eMedia forms part of, let's say, the HEI group, and I've been involved in the HEI group and in various capacities for many years. And when we sold our gaming and liquor businesses, the group asked me to assist in formulating some of the strategies in eMedia, which I did. And I decided that in November is probably a good time for me to hand over to Khalik Sheriff, who's the deputy CEO and who's been in the business for a very long time. So it's a natural handover, and I'll probably be involved in some format going forward. But I think the handover is a pretty seamless process.
Okay. So what are you going to be doing next exactly? Do you know yet?
No, I don't. I think I'm going to take some time off. It's been a very busy 13, 14 years, mm-hmm. and we've and sold many businesses. So, I'll take a couple of months to decide, what I want to be involved with. I've got some other investments as well, but it's a nice position to be in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you mentioned that eMedia is controlled by Hoskin Consolidated Investments, but perhaps for the benefit of listeners who don't understand or don't have a good insight into the eMedia structure, perhaps just walk through that. What are your biggest assets? I'd imagine ETV is one of them.
ETV was built on the free-to-air television license, so its principal asset in ETV in eMedia is ETV, mm-hmm. and we make most of our money in ETV. And over the last couple of years, the profits which we generated out of ETV was used to fund a number of initiatives. The second big initiative was ENCA, which is the news, 24-hour news, which we do for DSTV MultiChoice. So it's the news going to our pay TV partner platform. And the next phase, I guess, of investment was the investment into OpenView, which is our free-to-air satellite platform. And as part of that investment, it requires an investment not only in technology but also content. As we know, the only way which you attract viewers these days is through content. Everybody knows content is king. So ETV has transitioned, I guess, from just a broadcaster to a broadcaster that produces content, whether it be news content or dramas or other content. And I'd say that the three main pillars which we've got in the business today is ETV, our news business, and our free-to-air satellite platform, OpenView.
So I was having a look at your most recent set of financial results, and OpenView HD is a loss-making platform, but it's signed up a fairly impressive number of subscribers. The last count, I think, was around 1.1 million. What is it going to take to get that business to sustainability and profitability?
So we think we need a market share of about 6-7% of the total, say, free advertising market in South Africa. So that market's about 7.5 billion. And if you look at our cost structures and the amount which you spend on content, we need about 6-7% market share of that advertising pie in order to cover our costs. So at the moment, we're sitting in about 3.5%, and our latest results have said we probably need to get to 6. Whether it's 6 or 7%, I think is really determined by the quality of the content and the amount of content which we purchase. And there are two things I think that determine market share. One is the number of people on your platform. And as you said, we've got about 1.1 million now close to 1.3 million people that use our platform. And the second thing is once they activate on your platform, how much content they consume on your platform. So the relationship between the number of people on the platform and the content is not entirely sure. But my view is if you get somewhere between 1.5 and 2 million people on your platform, you should have enough people at a reasonable consumption rate to get to the 6-7% market share. In our business, if we get to 10% market share on OpenView, it's a fantastic business. And I think we're well on our way to breaking even. There's always a lead and a lag effect. So while we have 3.5% market share at the moment, we don't get 3.5% of the advertising cake yet. But that's normal in the television industry. It just takes time to build confidence from the advertisers that you've got an audience which they want to advertise to.
So when do you think you'll reach that 6-7% market share?
I'd say within the next 2 years. I'm not confident it will definitely be in the next 2 years. And the question is whether it's earlier than that.
Okay. All right, so let's talk about digital terrestrial television. I suspect there's a lot of ground to cover here. We all know that this project is horribly late, that we were supposed to complete it by mid-2015, according to the agreement we had with the International Telecommunications Union. We know this is a big problem for telecoms operators, which need the radio frequency spectrum that the analog broadcasters are still using. But how much of a problem is the delay in migration to broadcasters and especially to e-media?
It is a problem in the sense that one of our biggest costs is broadcasting cost. And anytime you've got a delay between moving from an analog to a digital system, it creates issues, not only on the cost side, but also in terms of the investment in technology. So not only are ourselves constrained by the investments, it's also Centec, who is the signal distribution, it's a partner in South Africa. They're also constrained in making these investments. And let's say the spectrum market is a dynamic market. The telcos and other users of spectrum typically require more and more spectrum over time. And that requires you to make investments in the technology platform. So even the technology platform, which was rolled out in 2008 and 2009, which you're using now on the digital side, even that platform would require investments if we go to a fully digital system in the future. So it's not optimal. You typically want these things to happen with a lot more certainty and a lot faster pace.
So I know that Centec often talks about the cost of so-called dual illumination, where they're running both analog and digital at the same time, which they've been doing for many years. You distribute your television, free-to-air television channels via Centec's transmission network, I presume. Yes. Do you then have to pay twice because of the fact that we're running both digital test trials at the moment as well as analog broadcasts? Are you paying double, in effect, the way Centec is?
No, we're not. The agreement with Centec is that we'll only pay for the digital component once we completely convert to DTT.
All right.
So until such time, we pay the analog cost. The problem with that is that over time, there are a number of analog transmitters which don't make sense for us. In small towns, where the cost of having a transmitter in a small town is just so high, and if you look at the audience around that transmitter, it really doesn't justify that cost. So part of the conversations which are happening now is, you know, the ability to optimize that analog and digital transmission network for audience. And while we're in this, let's say, middle area, it's difficult for Centec and ourselves to plan the network optimally.
So there seems to be some renewed vigor in government to get a move on with this project. I presume that you or your regulatory teams are in frequent contact with the government on this project. Are you optimistic that we're starting to get back on track again?
I think the conversation is a better conversation in the sense that doesn't appear that there are any preconceived ideas from government side. It appears that government have got one objective, and that is to release the spectrum as soon as possible as part of the, let's say, economic growth plan. And the spectrum is seen to be central to stimulating a number of industries and investments in South Africa. So in that sense, I think that the minister and the officials are listening to any solution which is possible. And I'd say that the main debate at the moment is in what way will we convert digitally? There are two ways, in essence, which we can get to digital migration. The one is to go fully digital, and the other one is a combination between digital and satellite. Now, it's interesting that government in the original policy contemplated both methods of digital migration, both satellite and a digital terrestrial transmitter. There seems to be more conversation now about the role of the satellite component ultimately in achieving digital migration. So that's where the conversation, I think, is centered at the moment. And if we want to make a tight timeline, which we think is possible, I think the satellite component probably needs to play a bigger role.
I've always wondered whether we could just get this project finished and moved on with by simply ditching the idea of going to terrestrial television broadcasting entirely and switching to DTH satellite. Is that a feasible option? I mean, there's so much pressure and demand from telecommunications operators, and I can only see that increasing in the years ahead, for that sub 1 gigahertz spectrum where the television broadcasters are sitting, that does it perhaps make sense to free up the entire sub 1 gigahertz band where both analog and digital television broadcasters will sit, and just move it all onto satellite and free up all of that terrestrial television spectrum for broadband?
Yeah, we've looked at this quite carefully in our group. And one, we think that you could probably make a migration date of 30 September 2019 if you accept certain principles. The first principle is that, one, satellite needs to play a much larger role in the migration process. And if you think about satellite as a technology, it's definitely superior to digital terrestrial because the quality of the signal is uniform. There are no gaps in coverage. Where any digital terrestrial network, because of the undulation just geographically, will have signal loss. So if you accept that satellite's probably better and there's no downside in accepting satellite as a bigger component of the migration process, then I think 30 September 2019 is an achievable date for migration, in fact, quite easily achievable. If you look at South Africa, there's about 14 million households in South Africa. And if you count, let's say, the number of satellite decoders out there between ourselves and DStv, I'd say there's probably about 8.5 million decoders in households which are already receiving a satellite signal. And if you look at the segmentation of the population, there's probably 3 to 4 million people who would never qualify for a satellite box on a commercial basis. And those are the households which government need to support, either through a digital or a satellite solution. So between ourselves and MultiChoice, I think it's feasible if we went through a program to say that migration is happening in 30 September next year. The remaining population or households between 8.5 and 10 million be able to acquire boxes through our retail networks quite easily to take us to the 10 million mark. In the balance of the population being 4 million households, you need to come up with a solution. Now, government's already provided satellite boxes to those areas in the country where it's never going to roll out a digital network. So government has already said, look, satellite is part of our solution for the far-flung, less populated areas. And if government said, look, we're going to provide a satellite plus a digital solution, whether it's subsidized or not, for those 4 million households, then, you know, I think there's enough technical capacity and enough distribution capacity and enough, let's say, physical boxes out there to be able to provide those households with a method to connect to the public broadcaster signal by 30th September 2019. So that's one suggestion which you said, like, in the government asked us for suggestions. That's one suggestion which we said, like, if you say satellite's got a bigger role to play, we think 30 September 2019 is feasible. If you're just going to rely on a digital conversion, digital terrestrial conversion, I think it could take a lot longer because of some technical complexities with signal sharing and just the status of the network.
Is scrapping terrestrial entirely feasible, though? I mean, Centec... I'm sure the telecommunications operators would love that idea, and I presume that there would be a knock-on economic benefit from the rollout of future broadband technologies. But Centec has obviously invested billions already in the rollout of digital terrestrial. Is it possible, do you think? I mean, what do the numbers look like? Could Could government direct CENTEC to switch off the terrestrial network and say, well, as a country, we're going to go satellite?
Well, I think the issue which you need to consider firstly is what's happening in the rest of the world. And by and large, in the rest of the world, DTT is a declining technology, and satellite, free satellite, is a growing technology. So many countries in the world are scrapping their DTT networks. I think Germany, Sweden, countries like that have gone through digital migration and are starting to turn off their DTT transmitters in favor of satellite, because satellite has been proved to be a superior technology. Whether the government wants to take that bold step now, you know, I'm not sure. But technically, that's the way the world is going. And there might be other considerations for government to have a hybrid model going forward. And for us, let's say, as the participants in the industry and the broadcasters, you know, I don't have any preference for a single or a hybrid solution. But I'd say that we need to agree what the date is which we want to achieve digital migration by. And whether it's with a hybrid model or single model, I don't care. But I think the most important thing is to get a date, because it's possible to make a date at this stage because both technologies are feasible and possible.
Are the broadcasters ready for digital migration? I mean, if a hard deadline is set of the third quarter of 2019, will the SABC particularly be ready to switch over?
I think so. Transmitting digitally is not that different to transmitting from an analog perspective. Yes, there's some conversions that need to take place. And if you look at the SABC's recent submissions to Parliament, clearly they've got their channel plans lined up already. And the most difficult thing to plan for in digital migration is that there's a proliferation of channels. So we've got three channels on the SABC at the moment. You know, I think they've said they want 7 or 8. So planning the content and having the resources to formulate, populate, and manage those channels requires a bit more work. But there's no significant effort, especially if I look at our operation, converting to the digital platform. There's no significant additional effort to do that. So I'd say that the broadcasters will not be the constraint.
Out of interest, what are eMedia's plans post digital migration? Are you also planning for a much broader number of channels on offer?
So we have, in anticipation of the digital migration, we've launched our satellite platform, OpenView. And on OpenView, we've got a number of channels, either channels which we curate ourselves or channels which we put onto the platform, either by acquiring those channels or having partnerships with the channel providers. So we've got, let's say, 15 odd channels on OpenView at the moment. And those channels require you to do two things. One, you need to assess whether they are valuable from an audience perspective, and you need to compare that to the cost. So acquiring a channel is quite easy to do internationally, but in order to fund that channel in the free world, you need to sell advertising. And that is the biggest balancing act which broadcasters have to do. You never know what the revenue is you're going to achieve in a channel, but you have to incur the money up front, which is part of the reason we're incurring such substantial costs on our OpenView platform. We're building the content in anticipation for the audience that needs to come. So we've been, let's say, improving our skills in terms of channel curation, selection, and monetization over the last couple of years. But I think we're ready for that. I mean, just the fact that we've been working on OpenView for a couple of years have enabled us to develop those skills. I think the public's going to see a huge benefit in terms of the type of programming, the quality of programming, and the fact that programming can now be tailored for a particular audience, whether it's male, female, young, old, sport, actuality, news, etc. Because you've got more choice in terms of channels, I think the viewer would be able to, on a linear basis, watch those channels which they ideally want to watch, instead of having to watch time segments in the existing linear programs. So from an audience point of view, it's very good. And with new technologies such as catch-up and things like that, which will increasingly be available on the free platforms, I think that the viewing experience is just incrementally improved.
Do you see a day in the future where linear broadcast television goes away? I know that we've seen the rise of Netflix, Amazon Video, Showmax, all these sort of on-demand platforms. Do you see a point in the future where the traditional model of television broadcasting, where one would sit down, watch what the broadcaster is, puts on the air at a particular time, do you see that going away at some point? And if so, how is that going to affect your business model?
You know, I can only talk from personal experience. Before I came into the business, you know, I guess I was on the bandwagon, which said that, look, Netflix is going to change everything. And, you know, there's one model. It's an on-demand model, or there's a linear model. And these two things are different poles. But increasingly what I'm seeing on our customer base is people want different things at different times. Mm-hmm. So I don't see us really competing with Netflix in a sense. I think it's more of a partnership. At some stage, the viewer wants to watch something on demand. They've got a particular show which they want to watch, and they'll download and they'll watch it, et cetera. But other times, people just want to sit on the couch and be entertained. And people do like to sit and surf a couple of channels. So I think our strategy in future will be to make sure that we give the customer what they want. If they want to access a platform which gives them an on-demand service, the on-demand service should be available through our platform. But if they want to sit down and just watch a linear channel, whether it be news or movies or series, we'll make that available to them as well. The second thing which is very interesting is people do like local content.
Yes.
And the international on-demand suppliers are not that focused on local content in far-flung regions. So if you look at the best performing shows on ETV, they're all our local shows.
Yeah.
So people either want to watch local dramas or they want to watch news or actuality programs. And the viewership on those shows far exceed the viewership which we achieve with our international programming. So I'd say while you've got local being quite dominant, plus a viewer wanting at some stage just to go and sit on the couch and chat and surf channels, I think these two platforms will coexist happily for a very long time.
All right. So the move to digital terrestrial television is going to change the landscape. Not only will companies like eMedia have the opportunity to broadcast a much wider range of channels, but we've also seen moves by the communications regulator ICASA to potentially license new players in this market. We've seen ICASA go through various processes over the last 10 years to try and license new players in the market. They've tried in the pay television space, not very successfully. Do you expect that the broadcasting landscape in South Africa is going to change fundamentally post the move to digital terrestrial migration? Do you think it's going to become significantly more competitive? And do you think the market can sustain a significantly more competitive market?
I'd say there are two different models out there. There's a pay space and the free space. On the pay space, with technology these days, I think you can build a business, albeit a small business, which is funded by a paid platform and develop or distribute unique content for that. In the free space, it's much more difficult. And the free space requires you to access an advertising, let's say, platform. And for you to access that platform, you require scale. If you've got 10,000 or 100,000 views, it's very difficult to monetize that audience in the free advertising world because advertisers have got just too much choice. So I don't think the landscape on the free side will change much in the future. The pay space is always going to be dynamic. And with different technologies, et cetera, you'll always find something happening in the pay space which you didn't anticipate. But I see us sitting with the majority of our income in the free space for a significant period of time. I don't see us going anywhere else. And in that sense, there might be some competition, but I don't think it's going to be significant competition because the barrier to entry is just so high. It's so difficult to build scale in the free space that, you know, for somebody new to come into the space, they need to have deep pockets and a lot of patience, which in the world today is difficult to find.
Do you think multi-choice is too dominant?
I don't think so. No, I think that the issue with multi-choice's dominance, I think, mainly is related to probably what they do on the sports side. And people feel that they've hogged the sports properties. But if you look at what people watch these days and their ability to procure other content outside of sport, so you say maybe they control sport. You could say there's an argument to be made there. But outside of that, you know, I think people have got enough choice. You don't have to have multi-choice. They can go to Netflix or Amazon or even watch our programming on OpenView if they wanted wanted to do that. And it's our task to be as competitive as possible in that space to make sure that the value proposition which we give to a viewer, which is you don't have to pay anything when you watch Openview. It's free. Once you bought the box, it's free. So it's our job to make sure that that value proposition is so strong that people say, look, I don't want to watch the multi-choice product. I'd rather watch your product. And in fact, we've seen on our movie channels, our movie channel is by far the most popular movie channel in South Africa, even compared to the multi-choice channels. And the reason for that is the content is very good. It might not be the latest movie, but people have seen that I don't have to watch the latest movie to be entertained. I just want to be entertained. So in the end, it's about understanding the value proposition. And if you segment the market in that way, you know, other than sport, I don't think there are many arguments to be made to say multiple choice is too dominant.
The reason I ask is that the recent ICASA hearings, I think they entered the pay television market, the SABC put forward some arguments. First of all, they want a review of the must-carry regulations, which state that, which in effect mean that MultiChoice can carry the SABC public service channels free of charge. They've also said they want caps on the amount of advertising that MultiChoice is able to take as a pay TV operator in South Africa. Can I take it from your response that you think the sort of punitive, if I can call them that, regulations on MultiChoice are not necessary?
No, look, at ICASA, I was very clear. Our position on advertising is that MultiChoice should not play in the advertising space.
At all.
Mm-hmm. MultiChoice is a subscription business. Their business was designed to be a subscription business. And our business model and the SABCs and anybody else in the free space is to access advertising income. Because MultiChoice is so dominant in, let's say, the spend side of it, that they can afford on the advertising side to do things which is not necessarily commercial. And our view is that MultiChoice, let's say out of the market of 7.5 billion rand, which is available for advertisers, for advertising spend, we said that at the ICASA hearings that MultiChoice should be limited to 1 billion of that spend. And the reason we said 1 billion is not because we think a business 1 billion is right, but you know, there's people employed in MultiChoice, they do certain things and they do have an advertising business. But for them to take the amount of advertising income which they're taking at the moment was never contemplated when subscription TV was set up. And there was a rule that the advertising income should be limited in a certain way. But if you look at the way the market has gone, I think the rule is that advertising income should not have been more than 50% of the income. But if you look at the size of the subscription base at the moment, the subscription base, I think, generates them somewhere close to 28 or 30 billion rand. Maybe it's 25 billion rand a year. Now, 50% of that is 12.5 billion. The total advertising market is only 7.5 billion. Mm-hmm. So the rule which curbed them from accessing the advertising spend is not an effectual rule. There was clearly thinking at that stage that, look, you need to make your money out of subscription revenue, MultiChoice. Don't make your money out of advertising income. So I think ourselves, both ourselves and the SABC were on the same page. They're saying, look, you can't play in both sides. You're either free or you're satellite, but you've got to decide. And I think that was our main point which we made at the ICASA hearings.
So I want to maybe go back a little bit into history, and I know a lot of these battles you may not have been involved in directly, but there's a lot of history in the DTT space over encryption and the fight between ETV and MultiChoice over whether the government-subsidized decoders should have encryption in them. Is that fight over now?
I think we've moved on in that area. While the discussions in terms of what should or shouldn't be on the set-top boxes was taking place, we couldn't afford to wait for the litigation or government to make a decision in this regard. And we rolled out our set-top box, being our free satellite set-top box, with the technology which is required in order to protect the content and our platform, and that's got encryption in it, but it's encryption which we can activate not based on a pay basis, but just based on when a subscriber accesses our platform, we activate the decryption module. So that allowed us to acquire content from the international providers because we could put in place digital rights management, et cetera, to protect copyrights. So without encryption, our argument has always been that it's difficult to acquire content, and you limit the choices available to the viewers in the free market. because we decided to go to a free satellite platform, we were able to put encryption in place and access the content which we thought was going to be required in order to make it successful and attractive to viewers. So I think we've moved on beyond that.
Okay, but I mean, ETV made a very big thing of the fact that, I mean, said that that encryption was absolutely crucial to the survival and the ongoing success of the free-to-air sector in South Africa. It was almost painted as if we don't get encryption, our very future is endangered. Was that perhaps a bit of hyperbole, or?
I don't think so, because if you were going to rely on a DTT box being the terrestrial model, so you would only be able to access the digital signal through a digital box. We still believe that encryption is essential to make sure that you access quality content on that platform. Now, because we've not put all our eggs in one basket, we'll have a digital network. But if in any way we're limited in the digital network on content rights, we will put that content on our free satellite platform. So the viewer and the general population in South Africa will always have access to fantastic content through our satellite platform. And in that sense, we've moved on beyond it.
I see. So before I let you go, Andre, maybe just your thoughts on what you'd like to see done to get this DTT project fast-tracked. I mean, what milestones would you like to see over the coming months? What does government need to do? What does the regulator need to do? What do broadcasters need to do to ensure that the spectrum is freed up as soon as possible?
So the most important thing from my side is we need to choose a date.
Okay.
You know, we've proposed a date, which is 30 September 2019. We think it's doable. Second thing is, once you've set a date, we need to get past the debate of whether you go satellite or DTT. Or, you know, we think a hybrid solution is acceptable. And whether the cost of DTT is high in the future or not, that's a debate which you can have in the future and deal with that down the road. The most important thing is to get analog to digital done. So instead of having the debate of whether hybrid's good or not, let's accept, look, we'll go for hybrid and then give the consumer the choice to either convert using a free satellite platform or a digital platform. Let the consumer choose, and government can decide whether they want to subsidize the free boxes as satellite boxes or whether they want to subsidize them as digital boxes. But that's not an issue for us to debate. The most important thing is to agree on a date. The second thing is, once we've agreed on a date, we believe that government should start selectively switching off transmitters across the country, because a big bang approach to these things is never a good idea. So we would say, we would suggest that we publish a schedule and say per month, which towns will be switched off from the analog network, so that one, the people in those towns have got a clarity that, okay, it's the end of January, my transmitter is off and I need to go and buy a box before that. If you leave it all to the 30th of September, you're going to have a rush, let's say in the month of August, which from a logistical point of view doesn't make sense. So just stagger the rollout and the installation of dishes and aerials and stocking the retailers with these boxes. To make that manageable, we think a staggered switch off, with the final switch off leading or happening, let's say at the end of September, is the best way to do it. And you'll probably leave the biggest center, you know, whether it's Gauteng or Cape or Durban, you'll probably leave the biggest one for September switch off. But you'll stagger the large cities throughout the year. So you maybe start Durban, then PE or PE, then Durban, then Cape Town, etc. And so you stagger them, and by the end of September, the whole country is converted. But a big bang approach, I think, would be the wrong way. So first is commit to a date, incremental switch off over time, and don't get caught up in the debate between satellite or digital terrestrial. Just say a hybrid solution is possible, and we'll deal with, you know, the final answer in the years to come.
Well, let's hope it happens, because I think the telecoms operators are really champing at the bit to get access to the spectrum now to roll out 4G and future 5G networks, of course. Andre van der Veen is CEO of eMedia Holdings. This has been a really great discussion. Thanks so much for coming on to the Tech Central podcast today.
Thanks, Duncan.